This is Out and About on Peoria Public Radio. I'm Nathan Irwin.
And I'm Jen Gordon with Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Today we're talking with Maestro George Stelluto, conductor and artistic director of the Peoria Symphony Orchestra, and concert violinist Arnaud Sussman. They're here to talk with us more about tomorrow night's concert, The Heroic Spirit. George and Arnaud, welcome to Out and About.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Let's start off with the Beethoven piece that you've selected for this program. It fits in perfectly with the title, The Heroic Spirit. Tell us a little bit about the name of Beethoven's Third Symphony.
You know, he originally dedicated it to Napoleon when he thought Napoleon was a champion of democracy. And then, of course, after he crowned himself Emperor of France, then the story goes that he tore the title page off and rededicated to somebody else. But there's an aspect of it where one of the early editions that Beethoven oversaw, he had written on there something like to the a heroic symphony. And so it became more of an ideal rather than about a person, although the second movement, of course, with the funeral marches, some people say it would be like the death of somebody in your mind that you were, you know, that you had huge disappointment, like you're, you know, here you find your hero has clay feet. So it's very profound and it's got a lot of fire in it and beautiful, but also it's got a psychology about it that's really fascinating. And it's kind of, you know, it's still in this middle period of Beethoven where he's kind of struggling with the heritage he's inherited from Mozart and trying to push that forward into the Romantic era. So it's conflict, but in a really wonderful, artful way.
It seems like a lot of Beethoven's symphonies are at least partially autobiographical. Is that the case with the third as well? I mean, are we seeing inside Beethoven's mind, inside his life with the symphony?
That's hard. Sometimes when you know, we can look back and we've got 20/20 vision. Everybody starts theorizing about this was this and this was this. But I think in this case, there's sufficient enough information to say that there obviously were some things in the symphony, especially since he had originally dedicated it to Napoleon. So can I use the word psychobiographical?
Sure.
I mean, it's more like the thoughts than about Beethoven's life itself. So it's not really biographical in that sense. It's in this period from late Mozart on where music starts to take on these kind of psychological flavors and aspects of human existence. And, you know, and it's funny because Goethe was around this time with the French, with the German Romantic literature. And I took a course once on Freud, and we actually started with Werther by Goethe. And he said, you know, that all of these things that Freud theorized and discovered were all present in the German Romantic literature. See, so all this stuff starting to come up. So I don't know if you can say like the actual physical life of somebody, but these pieces really do become psychological cross-sections, if you will, of somebody.
And talk a little bit about the second movement of the Beethoven, because over the years that has found a place in funerals and memorials. What is it about that second movement that, is it introspective? Is it, you know, does it have a somber quality?
It does. You know, I think that was played, the Boston Symphony played that when news was, the news came out that Kennedy had been assassinated and there was a concert and then they just played that. But it starts off with a kind of solemnity, but, you know, with Beethoven, he's so good at looking at the multifaceted sides of any of this psychological stuff. So, you know, you've got the kind of somberness and the sadness, if you will, but at the same time, it's got, you know, a little bit of that Prussian, it's almost like a military march, not with drums, but in a military procession of funeral, you know. In fact, I was saying to the orchestra the other day that besides the theme that everybody knows, that the strings and other instruments sometimes have this accompanying figures, which are yada-da-dum, da-da-da-dum. And we know that, of course, that famous Beethoven rhythm, which two symphonies later he was going to turn into an entire work. But I told them, I said, it's almost like you're in a Prussian funeral march and, you know, they're doing that little goose step at a slow pace. And, you know, so it's got this solemn, but then in the middle of it, turns into major, and it's almost a little bit nostalgic, like, you know, if you were at a funeral and you're remembering all the good things about somebody before the sadness comes back. So I just think that's a masterpiece, even within a masterpiece. So it's got that amazing quality about it. And I think that's where you kind of start to get the heroic part of the symphony.
We're thrilled that Arnaud Sussman is here and will be performing on this concert. Arnaud, can you tell us a little bit about your approach to the Brahms Violin Concerto?
My approach? This is maybe the king of violin concertos, although there are many great concerti, but I think it is grand in stature, in length, in the power that comes out of the piece. And, you know, we were talking about Brahms earlier and how there's nothing left up to chance with Brahms. He was a hard worker with his music and incredibly picky with himself. As a matter of fact, he destroyed a lot of music that I'm sure was really wonderful, but not up to his standard. And so this piece, like every piece of music he wrote, it is so incredibly beautifully crafted, and there's nothing extra. Everything is there for a reason. And one thing that I find particularly exciting about this piece is the fact that the violin is a part of maybe a more symphonic kind of writing, as opposed to other concerti, especially, you know, a little before with Mozart maybe, and other composers, where you have the orchestra and then the violin comes and is the star of the show. In Brahms's case, the violin is entirely part of the texture, and it is more of a conversation and more like a symphonic kind of writing. So that is the difficulty and also the fun of playing this piece, because if you really pay attention to what's happening behind you, it makes for a total experience.
Now, I always think of the Brahms Violin Concerto in conjunction with, say, the Tchaikovsky Concerto or the Beethoven. So how does it compare to some of its similar compositions?
Well, it's interesting. I played the Tchaikovsky last week, and Tchaikovsky, the difficulty with Tchaikovsky is a very virtuosic work also. I mean, Brahms is but virtuosic as well, but in a very different kind of way. And they're both massive in length. I find Brahms much more rewarding to play. The music seems, I love the Tchaikovsky Concerto, don't get me wrong, but the music seems more profound to me with Brahms. And again, I think it's the fact that the intersection with the orchestra, the playing with the orchestra is just more rewarding. You, as a matter of fact, in a lot of places, the solo violin plays accompaniment figures to orchestra members that play the melody. And that happens in other concertos also, but I think Brahms took it to another level. Now, as far as the Beethoven Concerto, which is also one of the great concertos, maybe another favorite of mine, actually, I think Brahms modeled a lot of his concerto on Beethoven's concerto, as far as form and many details within the music. And if I'm not mistaken, actually, at the premiere of the Brahms Violin Concerto, Joachim Addis insisted that he perform the Beethoven as well. So, and the key is the same, and there are many similarities. And so this whole program obviously makes sense to have both of these composers play it together. And we all know the impact that Beethoven had on all the composers that came after him, in a good way and sometimes in a bad way, because I think in Brahms's case, in a lot of composers' case, it got them, you know, stuck, you know, seeing this very powerful figure that pushed the envelope in so many ways before them.
Arnaud, you mentioned that this is a very rewarding experience to play the Brahms Concerto, perhaps because of the more collaborative, conversational nature. And George, I'm just wondering, from the conductor's podium, when you're working on a piece that is as collaborative and conversational with the soloist, what are the implications for the conductor? How does this heighten your experience in the middle of pulling all of this together?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's almost like the orchestra and the soloist are doing chamber music together. So you figure out when, you know, what voices are at the forefront and what voices are in the texture, and how, and that's constantly changing. And, you know, Brahms is especially good at suddenly you're listening to something and like, how did we get here? You know, because he can just change things so subtly. And so there are, you know, moments where the orchestral writing is just simply ethereal, and then the violin solo takes that over, and it should be seamless, and it should be like a chamber music endeavor. I was laughing because when you were talking about Brahms, and and playing Brahms. His style, because everything is so well thought out and everything is in place, you have to be an incredibly vigilant performer of Brahms. And the best analogy I heard of this was years ago in Juilliard. We were going to be doing a performance of Brahms' Second Symphony with Bernard Haitink. So I was doing one of the rehearsals, and the concertmaster of the London Symphony Orchestra was coaching the strings, and he looked at them and he said, "You know, Brahms is not a good friend." And we're all like scratching our heads, like, "You know, you play Schubert, you play Schumann, you play Mozart, and they're all, oh, thank you so much. And Brahms is the friend that says, I really appreciate what you're doing. Could you do one more thing for me?" He said he's always demanding. And that's literally what it is. But once you're in the zone, it just makes sense to do that. So it's, you know, it's got this strength about it. And when you can have a collaboration like this, that's what I think musicians live for.
Arnaud, you've been compared stylistically to some of the old school violinists, the greats, Jascha Heifetz and Fritz Kreisler. How do you feel about those comparisons? And can you maybe explain a little bit about how you would describe your voice on the violin?
Well, I'm incredibly honored for those comparisons, although I feel wrong even being spoken in the same sentence as Heifetz, for example, who was a god amongst violinists. But I do think that I work very hard to try and keep this old school sound still alive. I think you'll hear a lot of violins from the older generation. I can think of the Art of the Violin, I think, documentary where I know Ivry Gitlis and Itzhak Perlman, they all talk about how maybe nowadays a lot of violinists sound the same, and I find that sad. And I don't know if it's entirely true. There are a lot of wonderful players. But anyways, as far as myself, I grew up listening to the recordings of the great old violinists, and this particular sound speaks to me very much. So I do work very hard to try and keep this alive. And I think part of this is what is beautiful about violin playing. And I teach nowadays, so I really try very hard to bring this to my teaching also, is it's an art form, like many art forms, that is passed down from generation to generation, from a master to a student. And so it's really your responsibility to keep this alive and going, and especially when it comes to the sound and the soul. So I always say I may not play as fast and as in tune and as many other players, but I hope I can bring the soul out in concerts, yeah.
We've been talking with violinist Arnaud Soussman and with George Stelluto from the Peoria Symphony Orchestra. The PSO's next concert, Heroic Spirit, features music of Beethoven and Brahms. It's tomorrow night at 8 in the Peoria Civic Center Theater. Thank you both for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This weekend, the Central Illinois Ballet presents Romeo and Juliet. Adapted from one of Shakespeare's most popular plays, this ballet retells the timeless story of two star-crossed lovers. Performances take place tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Illinois Central College Performing Arts Center. For tickets and more information, visit www.ciballet.com.
And the Bradley Symphony Orchestra is finishing their season with a concert this weekend. The program includes the overture to Die Fledermaus, Saint-Saëns Piano Concerto No. 2, and a symphony by Howard Hanson. That concert is Sunday afternoon at 3 at the Dingeldine Music Center.
Out and About is a production of Peoria Public Radio and Arts Partners of Central Illinois. Each week, we connect you to the arts community by talking with local arts leaders and performers.
Our producer is Sierra Doss. You can learn more about Peoria Public Radio when you visit our website, peoriapublicradio.org. I'm Nathan Irwin, and this is Out and About.